From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Researchers have identified the killer whale that beached itself on Prince of Wales Island on Thursday and later freed itself. Now the team behind the identification explains why the process of naming and identifying whales is so important. KRBD's Molly Lubbers has the story.
T-146D. That's the name of the killer whale that was recently live-stranded on Prince of Wales Island. It may not roll off the tongue, but that identifier is significant, says killer whale researcher Jared Towers.
It allows us to keep track of the whale after the stranding, and that may be among the most important parts of identifying animals like this.
The whale hasn't been spotted since it freed itself on Thursday, or at least no one has seen it and identified it as T-146D again. But Towers says the documentation matters. He works for Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans and is also part of a team of researchers called Bay Cetology. He led a team that compiled a photo identification catalog of West Coast transient orcas, also known as Biggs killer whales.
There's over 300 of them. They're the ones that are typically seen from Alaska and further south down to the lower 48 off the west coast of North America.
The man who identified the beached orca is Towers' colleague, Gary Sutton. Sutton says the eye patch of the whale was fairly distinctive, alerting him that might be T-146D.
It's got a big kind of hook on the front and comes in. It sets her apart from a lot of the rest.
But to be sure, he says he checked multiple photos of the whale against the catalog. Though he used feminine pronouns to refer to T-146D, he says the gender isn't confirmed. It's mostly a guess based on the shape of the whale. But he says that they do know it's 13 years old. As for whether it will survive in the long term, there are some good signs pointing that direction, says Sutton.
I was fairly optimistic because of the way it looked and the fact that there wasn't a significant amount of blood in the tide pool below it and seemed to be in good health.
That said, contrary to some posts on social media, NOAA Fisheries says they have not confirmed if the whale has rejoined its pod. But Tower says there's a good track record of this species surviving the live strandings. Before this most recent stranding, he says five individuals from this population had been documented live stranded over the last 20 years. All of them survived the initial stranding, he says, and four are still alive, as far as they know.
They've all rejoined their families after stranding, and they've all gone on to survive and live normal, healthy lives. And the only reason we know that is because their identities were documented when they were stranded, and their identities were further documented.
Towers says there are several kinds of killer whales along the West Coast, but all the live stranding events were Biggs killer whales, which he says like to hunt harbor seals in shallow waters.
I don't think anyone knows exactly when this whale stranded or what those circumstances were, but I would make a wager that there was harbor seal hunting as the motivating factor.
Still, there's a lot unknown about T-146D, including exactly why it stranded. But because it's been identified, there's a good chance that the killer whale could be documented again, and researchers will know if it survived in the long term, too. But no update on a snappier name. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Molly Lubers.
In other news, Sitka has its first mask mandate. At an emergency meeting on Thursday, the Sitka Assembly voted 6-0 to require masks in public spaces in an attempt to curb the largest outbreak of COVID-19 in the community since the beginning of the pandemic. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
In July of 2020, the Sitka Assembly considered a mask mandate. Though it was a resolution with no enforcement arm, it still didn't pass. But this time around, things were different. The more contagious Delta variant has reared its ugly head in Sitka, causing the community's worst outbreak of the pandemic so far. And the pressure was on the Assembly to do something when it met for an emergency meeting on Thursday. The ordinance temporarily requires masking in indoor public settings. It expires on August 24th, or when the city's COVID alert level shifts from high down to moderate. Those who don't wear masks in areas where they're required may be fined $50. Dr. Robert Hunter was one of 9 members of the public who called on the assembly to approve the ordinance.
It's more than a common courtesy, like wearing a shirt or shoes, which anybody would do in a restaurant or a grocery store. A mask really is as simple as putting on a shirt, but it's potentially preventing life and death situations for people you're encountering.
Search Chief Medical Officer Dr. Elliot Brule also called on the assembly to pass the ordinance, citing the high transmissibility of the Delta variant.
This current variant spreads hundreds of times more easily than the wild-type virus we were dealing with last year. Masks have been scientifically and medically proven to reduce spread. In my opinion, as a physician, they should be required indoors in public spaces by all in this circumstance. It's consistent with CDC guidance. It's the medically correct thing to do at this time.
Brule said search hospitals and medical centers are near capacity and also pushed the assembly to consider mandatory testing at Sitka's airport. A few members of the public argued that masks aren't effective and pose their own health risks, but most of the 11 Sitkans who spoke against the mandate were concerned with personal freedom. Mary Todd Anderson questioned how the city would enforce it and worried it would turn neighbor against neighbor.
And the idea of policing this, enforcing it, where are we going to go? What's next? Nabbing our neighbors? Oh, Mary Todd Anderson. Oh, she's at church. She didn't wear a mask. Nab her now. Get her name. Get her social security number, whatever. What are they going to do, lock us away on Bjorka?
And Jaylene Owen said that the ordinance would cause further division.
Are you prepared for the psychological damage long-term mask usage will have on our children because they will be deprived of critical social interactions? While this disease is real and not going away, we as a community do not need more restrictions and mandates that cause division.
While more members of the public spoke against the ordinance at the meeting, several assembly members mentioned the large amount of emails they'd received about a mask mandate. Member Crystal Duncan outlined how those emails broke down.
I had 66. 7 of those were opposed, which comes out to about 10%. 57 said you need to do something, so that's 86%. 53 of those said I strongly support a temporary mask mandate. Temporary.
Member Tor Christensen challenged the personal freedom argument.
I hear a lot of, well, you're impeding on my freedoms. Well, you don't have a freedom to hurt other people. And I was thinking about this the other day, that if I took one of my guns, and I actually have a lot of them, and fired a clip into the air when I was in town, the chances of one of those bullets hitting somebody on the way back down would be very low. But I would get arrested.
And member Kevin Mosher, who voted against the mask mandate last year, said his perspective had changed.
You know, I've always fought against, or in my mind, against mandating anything because it's a big deal. It's heavy. But, you know, it is a mask. It's to protect everyone, but our children, and who cannot protect themselves. And we're not a good community if we're not doing that.
Mayor Steven Eisenbeiss and Assembly Members Rebecca Hemshute and Kevin Mosher all expressed reservations around the enforcement section of the ordinance. Eisenbeiss said he'd be happy to remove the fines, and Mosher was concerned about how police would enforce it. City Attorney Brian Hansen said, like with other minor offenses, like using a cell phone while driving or not putting out garbage before 5 a.m. to avoid bear problems, it would be up to the police chief to determine how and what resources to put toward enforcing the mask mandate. No motions were made to alter the enforcement language in the ordinance. Ultimately, the assembly voted 6-0 in favor of the mask mandate. The emergency ordinance goes into effect immediately. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And this just in, Alaska's state government has joined with other Republican-led states in asking the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's the 1973 decision that found that there is a constitutional right to have an abortion. Alaska Attorney General Treg Taylor signed on to a filing in support of an appeal by Mississippi. The brief was filed by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. The appeal seeks to defend a Mississippi law that outlaws most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Lower courts struck down the law. New Hampshire is the only state with a Republican attorney general that did not sign the Texas Texas filing. If Roe versus Wade is overturned, abortion law could be determined at the state level. The Alaska Supreme Court has ruled that the right to privacy in the state constitution includes the right to an abortion as a fundamental right. The Supreme Court is scheduled to hear the case in its term that begins in October. Taylor's office didn't immediately respond to a request for comment on why he signed the brief. For more on this and other news, you can go to ktoo.org. This is KTOO News.